him a paper again.
It's not bad.
Thank you.
Like the tape on the bottom.
You better nail down the furniture here. It's going to be gone in a few minutes. Well, good morning.
Good morning.
What would we like to talk about today?
Governor, what do you think of the reported split in the Republican Party? The chairman is not going to seek re-election, and he says it's partly due to the insurgence of this conservative new right. What do you think of the change split?
Well, I suppose that we can now contend that we are closer to the Democratic Party in the sense that they're always fighting with each other. And that's always been perceived as being macho, so now we have a macho central committee. They always admired the Democrats because they always fight among each other, so I suppose that's the case of the Republican Party. I've lamented over many years the fact that we as Republicans are a minority in registration, and that we really need to be lean, and we've got to be pulled together if we have any hopes of success. And yet we constantly do this to ourselves. Walter Huss, I can recall, badly damaged the party as a party structure. And still there's an element there that wants to pull from one side to the other. My own personal attitude is that there's room enough for different philosophies, and people need to recognize that there are different philosophies, but they ought to respect them instead of trying to overlay your own and say everybody has to be like this. Now that would be true in terms of what we'd call the moderate or even the liberal side of the Republican Party versus the conservative side. Right now it's the conservative side saying, now you've all got to be like this. It's my hope that whoever runs for office would try to convey to the active party members that there's room for these philosophies, but don't demand that yours prevail all the time. And if we have any hopes of being successful as Republicans, that we better pull together. Because if we don't, I mean, it's going to get worse all the time.
You think this is weakening the party even more?
Sure, absolutely. I think that we went through Bob Boy and then Dermot O'Scanlan and then Bill Mischofsky. And when I say through them, I think each of them moved us, to more of a moderate position as a Republican Party, away from Walter Huss's adventure into the party. And we were, I thought, building a pretty solid base to work with, and now this comes along.
Are you concerned that there will be another takeover of the state party by the conservative government?
Not in the sense of a Walter Huss type conservative. There's this talk about Lutz, and he's conservative. There's no question about that. I've always made a separation because even Walter Huss brought in some really good people in the sense that they were devoted to the state, devoted to the nation. They worked hard at what they did, and I can't fault them for that. Nor would I fault anyone else who has their own views. My only thought is that don't try to overlay your views that everybody has to be just like you are, and that you accommodate the different viewpoints within the party.
Where would this division start showing up, Governor? Would it be in legislative races? Would it be in the Senate race?
Yes, party it would. But my view has always been that the elected officials are the face of the party, and they really are. I don't think rarely do you run out and interview precinct committee people, but you would, obviously, legislators, or in this case, a governor. So we are the face of the party, and I do believe that the elected officials should be close to the party, or they should work together with the party. And clearly, if there is this real strong conservative group that says, you got to be like us, then the elected officials are going to stay away from the party. And I think that weakens the whole process.
Governor, do you have any concerns about the swelling of the Republican ranks with what's being called the evangelical right? Do you see any problems with the addition to partisan politics of what seems to be a religious element?
Yes. and it gets back to what I had said earlier, that, you know, we are from different religions or no religions. Depends in Oregon where you are. I have to be from a religion. And religion should be separate from the process of government and politics. And to try to overlay religious beliefs and make that, you know, going to a state central committee is like going to church, I think is an irresponsible approach to this system of government.
Governor, in the wake of Josephine Driscoll's taking the job of Standard Insurance, do you see a need for any Oregon laws that would bar state officials or regulators from going into the industry that they were previously regulating?
No, and I hope the legislature won't be rushed pell-mell into doing that. And I think it's time that people should begin to trust people. Joe Driscoll, I know for a fact, was a good consumer advocate. Joe Driscoll was an excellent insurance commissioner. She's been described by the industry, fair but firm by them. To make a presumption that she was doing something to benefit herself and not the people of Oregon, we've got to quit thinking that way, because if we continue the suspicion that anyone that enters governmental service has some kind of a personal goal in mind, then I think we're going to weaken the whole process. Let's turn our attention to the legislature with lawyers writing laws. Let's turn our attention again to the legislature of teachers voting on laws relating to education. If we were to say that shouldn't happen, we deny ourselves talent. Let's take Joe Driscoll only as an example, however. If someone was denied an opportunity to go back into insurance business, in this case she came from insurance and is going back to it, now we're trying to recruit somebody to be an insurance commissioner. If anyone knows about insurance, I mean, knows about the industry, they're going to be in the insurance business. And say, well, now would you come work for me, work for the people of Oregon? But remember, you can't go back to your prior livelihood for a year or 2 years or whatever it happens to be if you come and work for the state. Well, you know, it's a sacrifice enough to come and work for the state. Why should they make that added sacrifice? So then you find yourself with an insurance commissioner that doesn't know anything about insurance. Is that good for the state? I don't happen to think so. Now, I pick on that. It could be PUC or Energy
Gene
Department
Milden,
or...
Pardon? Gene Milden didn't come from the utility department.
Well, he learned while he was there.
Yeah. But John Lobdell said after he found out about Josephine Driscoll that he thought his 15 months, the span of 15 months, was a good distancing from his job at the PUC to the Northwest Natural Gas, and he was concerned about the appearance of Josephine Driscoll taking the job immediately.
Well, that's John Lobdell's opinion. You just have mine.
Well, what about the public appearance and the confidence public has in that?
I understand that, but I would say to whomever, you prove to me, let's take Joe Driscoll again. You prove to me that Joe Driscoll did something that was in opposition to the public interest. Don't make suspicions about it. Prove to me that she did that. No one does it. They keep making these suspicions or suggestions. Now, I understand this appearance of, but what I'm really suggesting to you is that we're going to deny ourselves, us in government, the opportunity to have qualified people serving in responsible positions, and that we have to be very cautious in regard to that. We might get somebody, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth phone call, ninth phone call, who would say, okay, I'll do it. That may not be the best person for that job. Or the alternative would be somebody that's retiring after being in the business and plans to retire, and they'll be the quote a dollar a year person for a while. That's, I mean, those are your choices that are left. I don't think that's good for the government of the state of Oregon. So, yeah, I'd say we have to quit this suggestion, this suspicion, and proof. Don't cast it about as being bad. Tell me where she or anyone else in state government. But as I say, Floyd McKay is coming from your industry. He's going to be in the governor's office. Now, when he's through, and who knows how long that's going to be, is he going to be denied going back into your business? Well, that's different. No, I don't think that's different. Oregon lawyers in the legislature or teachers in the legislature, isn't that an appearance of something? They're voting on laws that relate to the industry in which or the field in which they come from. They're actually making laws. Joe Driscoll doesn't make any laws. She writes rules and regulations, but she doesn't make any laws. I mean, don't zero in on it. If they're going to be holier than thou, let's be holier than thou altogether, clean.
But in the case of Josephine Driscoll, she was criticized for having pro-industry slants during her tenure as commissioner.
Well, specifically where?
Just in the way that she didn't regulate them as much as
I don't agree with that.
She got the criticism.
So I've been criticized. I just don't happen to agree. You ask for my opinion, that's my opinion. I don't happen to agree. The fact that somebody else criticizes is good media, but the fact is that I don't believe it. As I've talked with Joe, we've talked personally about the variety of things that are going on there. I know her interests, I know her concern for the consumer, I know what she's done. The critics always get more play than the non-critics. That's good news.
Let me make sure that I'm clear on this. You don't see any conflict whatsoever with going to work for a business that she regulated basically just almost immediately after leaving office?
I do not. I do not in the sense of Joe Driscoll, whom I know has been insurance commissioner, and I know has served the people of Oregon very well, and I know has been really concerned about the consumer. I know that. And she's going back to an industry. Now, if, however, you need some satisfaction, she's not going to be dealing in Oregon. She's actually going to be dealing in the other states in which Standard operates, not in Oregon. So she won't have anything to do with Oregon.
But it's still the same company. It's still the same company that she's regulating just a month ago.
Now, again, you asked me, I give you an answer.
In general, you wouldn't favor any type of waiting period after people leave these types of jobs before they...
No, I would not. Did we conclude with that?
Will you be logging down here, say, next month or this month, even on your school plan, and what components would be...
It'd be the same plan that I tried to get signatures on. And lobbying in the sense of talking to special interest groups, school boards that did support me initially. I'm going to talk to the State Board of Education on Friday. I'm going to have lunch with them and talk to them. I'm going to get legislators to introduce the bill for me.
What are the highlights of that plan? How is it different? What will it?
Well, the plan is really quite simple to explain, so that's incidentally one of the beauties, is that the approved budget, and let's take Estacada or take the last two budgets which passed, those become the base. See, right now they're not a base. They have to be voted on annually. They become the base. Instead of a 6% increase, it would be the growth of the per capita personal income. That relates to how we as taxpayers are doing. And so instead of just a 6% regardless of what we're doing, it's going to be a growth of per capita personal income. That's the growth that they would get. And so the half of the children in Oregon that are not covered by adequate tax bases will indeed now have tax bases. Now there's also a vote if they want a new tax base, and that's limited to two times a year. But there'll be no excess levies.
You can register as a lobbyist,
Do I have to do that? I'm a citizen. I'm going to be a citizen.
You said you'd come down here.
No, how many hours? Isn't there an hour?
16.
16 a month.
16 hours a month? Oh, I won't be doing that much. I'm not even sure I do 16 in the whole session.
Governor, you're going to be leaving office next Monday. Have you got any advice for the governor-elect coming in dealing with the legislature and making up?
Yes, I guess I would have one that the thought that I would tell him to be very cautious, just because he has a Democrat majority is not going to mean it's going to be easy. And just keep that in mind. Count more than 16 and 31, because there's always slippage, unfortunately, but there's always slippage. And I expect he will, at least I hope he will, do what I've done, and that is meet with the leaders, that's both the minority and majority leaders, once a week during the session. And I understand he's going to have a legislative assistant, something like that, someone that's going to be working the halls for him. I would hope that he wouldn't leave all of it to that person, that he would become involved. Now, becoming involved, as you know, in my case, I don't mean for him the same. It means going out and walking the halls. You could do that in your own office, but don't leave it to your assistant to carry the whole load. And I would also tell him that it's much more complicated than he thinks it is. He's got a lot of bills. He's got his major ones, of course, but he's going to have a lot of bills he wants to watch. And needs a good system to be able to do it. I give some other advice, but I don't think I necessarily have to do that. Are we all done?
No, Governor, we're going to interrupt this press conference. This is quite like John McDonald's This Is Your Life. But I added up this morning, I figured that you've had about 400 of these media availabilities over the last 8 years. I've covered about 200 of them. Charles has been here for all of them, and as one of the senior members of the Capitol Press Corps and as the president, he has a few words on something for you to take back to Beaverton with you.
Well, my goodness.
As Greg said, Governor, we want to express our thanks for your accessibility. You've been very open. I've been here for three governors, and you've been as accessible probably as any public official I've dealt with. That includes Tom McCall. You've been accessible to the point, even in the famous Arizona speech. You at least called the AP, and you may have called them, you called us, and probably wondering what all the fuss was about.
Yes.
But we appreciate that, an official, and that's really the only about all the press can ask for, so I'm going to give you this. Good luck.
I treasure that. I really treasure that. I knew I was coming out here for the last time, and I'm bound to get emotional. But I really do. This has been a highlight of my schedule. It may seem strange for a politician to say that, but I keep looking forward to these opportunities. I also want to tell you something. I appreciate your patience, because these have not always produced anything necessarily newsworthy. But you come down nonetheless. I suppose maybe hoping I'm going to crash on the third turn. You never know. But you come down anyway. And my relationship with the media, I've said it a number of times, and I mean it sincerely. I really enjoy you. And I'll tell you a story. And some of you have heard it, because I've told it privately. As a minority leader of the Republican leader of the Senate, I'd go down and shoot breeze with you down in the press room, and I enjoyed it very much. And I also realized that the Republican leader of the Senate is not somebody that you're trying to find news from, and not necessarily quotable. So it was a kind of a comfortable relationship in which we could talk about a variety of things and kid and just have a good time. After I was elected and before I was sworn in, I just wandered down the press room to kind of chew the fat with the folks down there. And all of a sudden, everyone was, now I'm a governor's seat, so now this is something more important, trying to find a piece of news. And I walked out, and I was with Benny, and I said, doggone it, I can't go down there anymore and just shoot the breeze. And I kind of missed that. But this is my way of shooting the breeze with you. I thank you. I thank you for your patience, your generosity, your treatment. Obviously, you agreed at times and disagreed at other times, and that's the nature of it. Rarely have you strained to take shots at me. And when I say that to you, somebody would say when, I can't remember. I just know it happened once in a while. I don't carry those kind of buckets around. But I treasure this very much. I mean that sincerely. I've had, as you know, many plaques and presentations, but this one is very special to me. And I'm going to miss you all. I really am. Thank you very much. Well, I tell you, last time as a governor and one responsible for the health and welfare of Oregonians, I would really have a couple of wishes. One of them, it relates to our young people, and not necessarily in terms of schools, but it's my really hope that the programs of Just Say No and a Safe Homes program, in other words, peer-to-peer anti-drug, really takes hold, and that there are fewer young people that will take drugs and become addicted to drugs. I would wish for a stabilized school system in the state of Oregon. I would wish, finally, for economic health, that is, jobs for as many Oregonians that want jobs, including me.
Huh? Those aren't personal resolutions, though.
No, they're not personal. Well, they are personal. Personal in the sense that how do you separate being personal and governor? When I'm governor in Vicatea, yeah, that's true. But, you know, I've lived 8 years full bore of my life in full interest of the people of the state of Oregon. So it's almost like it's my wish. It's a wish that I want, something that I'd like to see happen. If you want a wish for Vicatea, well, I'll give you one. I hope he does pretty well in business. Hope he makes a little money next year. Is that about it? Before you leave, if that's about it, if that's something else. You know, I have, as you've seen me, announced the appointment of people to office, and we bring them in, and I give you a little lecture about why it was I think I picked them, and then give you a chance to quiz them. Well, we've got a reverse. What I have is somebody leaving. And should I say nice things about them before I let you ask them any questions? And Denny Miles has served me well, and sorry to see him leave. Any questions for Denny Miles? You didn't know I was going to do that, did you? No, you that was not part of our script.
Is Nebraska the closest place you could find a job?
Well, they had to go that far to find out that they didn't know him. Up to Nebraska, they knew him.
It's not a job. Temporary.
Oh, that's right. It's a temporary. We've had to make sure, but this is a temporary assignment. He will be returning to Oregon as soon as this.
Is this an indication that Governor Orr is as publicity shy as you are? Will Denny have as little to do for her as he had to do for you?
Would you like to answer that question,
no,
Mr.
No,
Miles?
No.
Oh well.
I may say no comment for the first time in 8 years, Governor. I avoided it.
I would tell you, I'd like to share with you, you know, we have a Governor Orr of Indiana as well. So I was telling the folks back there at the Republican Governors Association that the Republican governors are going to do very well because we have both Orrs in the water. I made that up.
They hissed at me right there.
Huh? You don't like that?
No, they hissed at me there, too.
They did. I know they they did. Yeah, they groaned. I wish you all personally a happy new year. We will have our last one next week, and I look forward to that as I have the rest of them. Meantime, thank you for a good year this year. I appreciate having the chance to talk with you once a week. Appreciate you showing up. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week. Thank you.
Thank you. By national standards, $100,000 campaigns are not that unusual on legislative races.
How much?
$100,000 legislative races may be unusual in Oregon, but
yeah,
not anywhere else.
Yeah. But you see, we're still behind, even with the incredible amount that was spent in this last governor's race, about $5 million. I have to be honest with you, tell you, I still find it incredible that the million that I spent was front page news and everybody was horrified, but the $3 million that the governor-elect spent just seemed to be one of those things that happens. I find that a little difficult to understand, but you're the ones that deal with it. I don't. I'm just an observer in the process.
Is $3 million buying more than $1 million did?
No, it didn't buy as much because my margin of victory was greater than his. Okay?
Thanks a lot.